Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. Some parents dread the thought, and some can't wait to send their kids off to college or university and reclaim that extra bedroom for scrapbooking or some such purpose. But for many people, regardless of whether you're excited or not excited, this phase in life can come with its own emotional and even financial challenges. Certified financial planner Matt Moline can relate to not looking forward to having an empty nest. So he wrote a book that covers strategies to help parents prepare, and teens too. It is called Empty Nest, Full Pockets: How to Emotionally and Financially Prepare for You and Your Child's Future. He joins us now from Des Moines, Iowa. Hello there.
Good afternoon. Good to talk with you.
Canada and the U.S. are similar, but also different. Our tuition fees aren't as high as many schools in the U.S. Our education savings plans work a little differently. But I think there is a universal truth that that you can probably articulate for parents and have in common with parents in terms of the mixed feelings you have as you have had as your four kids walked out that door. What has the transition been like for you?
Yeah, we likened it in the book to a tug of war, because it is like you mentioned. Boy, it would be maybe nice if they weren't here all the time, but then the thought of them leaving can be very disheartening as well. And so that tug of war of emotion, they're going through it, you're going through it, they're wanting to become more independent, they get a taste of it and they like it. You feel like you've been abandoned. You work so hard to be a great parent to these kids and teach them all these life lessons that they're now either disregarding or ignoring. And there's just almost a feeling of abandonment sometimes. But what we found is on the other side of that, there is great joy and adventure as well for everybody, for all parties concerned.
We talk a ton about saving for a kid's education and, you know, how that begins ideally the day that they're born. What we talk less about is this particular phase in which, you know, you've either done the savings or you haven't, but they're headed off regardless. What are some of the financial dynamics that are ever present for kids as they move out, for kids and parents, as they move out and begin this journey?
For the kids, they're going to be learning about money in a new way, and that they're going to have to help do more of the management on their own. My son's second or third weekend in school, he called me and said, I had no idea how expensive life was, quote unquote. And so they're having to see money move in and out of their wallets maybe more frequently than since the time that we've taken care of them. And then for the parents, it's really finding that balancing act of, you have a future now to be thinking about. And we've spent so much time, money invested in our kids, we sometimes forget that we have a future to be thinking about. And so we can't jeopardize that in totality for then our assistance of the kids and their needs. So finding that, striking that balance is good work, but it's hard work.
What did you say to their kids before they left your family home about where you would catch them if they fell? Could they pick up the phone and say, I now don't have enough money for food? Would your response have been, here's $500? Or would your response have been, you need to get a job?
It would have been both. So if there was an emergency of sorts, I would have helped. This goes to a lot of the family dynamics and kind of the money mindsets of the family. Some are strong believers in really assisting the kids along the way as much as they can. Others feel like they need to bootstrap it. And so finding, again, a balance there to say, I'll help with this, but I expect this in return, and or I don't want to go through this again. So let's develop a plan.
You have four children, which frankly was irresponsible. I'm one of five. It's irresponsible. I mean, just what are the economics of that? How did you think about undergrad versus what may happen after that? Because in some families, this is a ticket to ride that can go to a second undergrad degree, a master's, a PhD. And in other families, it's like, listen, we barely have enough to support you, you know, to put groceries in your fridge during that 4 years, let alone another degree.
So we set a parameter of what we would pay for. In our case, in Iowa, the in-state schools are very, very good schools. And there's, unless they had something very specific they wanted to study, would give them a good return on their investment and our investment as well. And so we set that expectation. If they wanted to move outside of that, they would be on the hook for the cost differential. So we tried to set a baseline of, this is where we can help and will help, and this is where we won't.
Did you require that they work in the summers between terms?
I did, unless they were going to school. So like the first year, the freshman year, we encouraged them not to work. And so we had them working there in high school years to save up some money. And then we supported them. And if they're living on campus in America anyway, they have the meal plans. So they have very little extemporaneous cash that they needed that first year. But then from there, we did expect in the summers, in many cases, my kids ended up staying at their schools and working either at the university or in a business surrounding that area, because we had to pay rent in the summers, whether they were living there or not. So I began to encourage them to stay there and be productive.
What did you notice about having teenagers living under your roof and I'm sure eating you out of house and home, and then moving to a world in which there weren't teenagers under your roof? Was that an increase in expenses overall? Was it a decrease in expenses?
It was a decrease in monthly expenses. And a lot of parents don't realize that your income is going to support some of your tuition expense because you're not feeding them and you're not just a number of the things that you're doing for them now you won't be doing. That'll be happening at school. And so if you've saved for school and they're going to eat and live there, that those expenses can be anywhere from what, $500 to $1,000 a month, depending on the kid. Now, I had a big football playing kid and I've never seen a human being eat like him. So when he was gone, I felt like we were saving thousands on groceries. So it depends on each kid, but there's definitely some savings there. And when we do a plan for parents, we do count that to say you're going to have this freed up income, either money that you've been saving for school and or these monthly expenses that are going to change.
As I mentioned, I'm one of five. And one of our complaints as siblings was we would often say, life is not fair. How did you navigate fairness amongst your four kids? And how did you even go about defining it? Because in our family, fair was not equal. And we knew that from, you know, a very young age.
This is rampant with my twins. They're always over their shoulder. He got this, she got that. And so we just did our best to say, listen, in your next life, you'll probably have perfect parents and they'll figure all of this out for you and it'll be 50-50. But we're doing the best that we can, and everything isn't going to be fair. And maybe that's one of the best lessons that we can teach kids is that, you know, life isn't fair. I was just listening to Matthew McConaughey's autobiography and he's talking about that, how that being a great lesson for him. He went to Australia and it was rough. It was unfair, lots of it, but it taught him so much about life. And so things aren't always fair. And so as parents, we want to do the best that we can, but also accept that there's life lessons and maybe some things having to be a dirge or a struggle.
One of the big challenges that parents face is the trade-off between their lives and in retirement and the success of their children and the amount that they would put towards education. In a world of finite resources, how do you help clients make what is a very personal decision in terms of where those dollars are best spent based on the values of that family?
We have the family go through a pre-approval process like you would for a mortgage. So we say, if here's how much you're going to be paying for school, here's how much you've saved, here's what your monthly income looks like. So this is the type of school that you can afford. This is the amount that would work for your family on an annual or four-year basis or whatever they're looking at, and then drill into the schools from there. So if they know that, they have their arm with that knowledge, and that's a family conversation to say, kids, this is what we can afford. This is what that looks like. If you want something more, now we move into the student loan arena and some of those. And what your life as a this for the student when they're out, what kind of income they can expect, and what that student loan debt might mean for where they want to live and how they want to live.
What insight would you provide for parents on the power dynamic? And I say that because some parents fund education no strings, some parents fund education with lots of strings and ones that they can justify. So I will pay for this particular program, I will not pay for that program. You will work and I will pay, you don't work, I won't pay. How do you help parents figure out what is right for their family?
So we take them through an exercise called Fiscalosophy, and it helps me understand what their financial philosophies are and some of the money messages that they're living with, many of those that we take from our own childhood, our own parents. And so in the book, I do a story about Jack and Diane about, you know, one had everything and one had nothing. And so helping them see and understand their partner and how they're evaluating this decision. and then how the decision will financially affect them. So bringing some of those numbers forward can be helpful in seeing this is not going to work. And if you do this, it's going to delay, you know, your dream of being done at 62, for instance. Mm-hmm. There's no way that's going to happen if they go to this school with this type of expense. So where can we find some compromise and reinforcing their role as a mentor now versus perhaps more of a dictator, like when the kids are younger. Right. Good to stand alongside them in this process. But having them learn some of it and go through some of it, fill out the applications and the scholarships and the essays and all the stuff that goes with that. So stepping back, allowing them to make mistakes, but being a mentor and helping them learn from the things that you've learned all these years.
Really interesting stuff. Matt, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Bruce. It's been great.
Matt Moline is a certified financial planner. He is also the author of Empty Nest, Full Pockets, How to Emotionally and Financially Prepare for You and Your Child's Future.